Good afternoon. I'm going to call the House Commerce Committee to order. We have one piece of leftover business from last year, 2019, and the approval of minutes. Has anybody had a chance to peruse the minutes? And I'm sure that our razor sharp memories are going to catch any mistakes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
I remember everything.
Excellent.
About my time in the Commerce Committee. And I would move approval of the minutes from March 27th, 2019.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stevenson moves approval of the minutes of March 27th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Welcome back, everybody. Good to see you all. I hope that we had a good interim, and I know a lot of work has been done over the interim by a lot of people. We are obviously hitting the ground running because we have a short session this year, and we'll be getting going on our hearings. Before we start, I do want to make notice and welcome a new staff member to the Commerce Committee, and that is Simon Brown, our CLA. Welcome, Simon. So, excellent. With that, we can move forward with the bill. Representative Howard is on the committee, so it looks like we might be having some technical. 1 second.
We're going to relive the Iowa caucuses again, huh?
Too soon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm here today presenting the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act.
And Representative Howard, if you can move the bill and, yep. and put it properly before us if you would like. And
yes, I'm a little out of practice.
We all are.
I would like to move House File 3100 and make a motion to refer it to HHS policy.
Excellent. Thank you.
Right now, as we speak, Minnesotans with type 1 diabetes are asking questions that many of us find difficult to comprehend. And should I buy groceries or afford my medication? You know, what if I take a half dose today? Can I make it to my next paycheck? What happens if I lose my job and my health insurance? Will I lose my life as well? This is the reality for thousands of our friends, neighbors, and family members, and we have the power to do something about it. And that's what we can do by passing the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act. This committee heard Alex's bill last year, and it passed the House. As you know, it didn't ultimately pass the Senate. A bipartisan group of legislators have worked on this bill really since session adjourned. And this bill is the product of a lot of that work with good ideas from both Democrats and Republicans to build a bill that meets four standards that we set forth on a bipartisan basis, which is that we need to address the emergency issue facing Minnesotans that can't afford their insulin, they need to survive. We need to address the long-term care challenges facing insulin and patients and affordability. We need to set up a program quickly because time is of the essence, and we need to ensure that pharmaceutical companies contribute to the solution. That's the kind of solution we have here today. In broad strokes, I want to walk through it. We are creating a program that provides a path to Minnesotans most in need or could be at risk of rationing their insulin, a path to get a fill of their insulin in the pharmacy when they need it. And vitally important, we ensure that access happens at the pharmacy utilizing the existing network and delivery method that works best for patients. We are also connecting patients to a long-term solution through a navigator and MinSure. We want to make sure that Minnesotans have an opportunity to get on to health plans that might cover insulin at an affordable rate. And if not, we want to square them away with a path to get a supply of insulin so that it's affordable for them. In addition, this bill includes a cap on insulin copays at $30. One thing that's happened since session adjourned, four of the large health plans in Minnesota have stepped up, and I'm grateful that they have. They've capped at insulin copays for $25 and under, for folks on their plan, and that includes a subset of Minnesotans. And since the goal of our long-term program is to get folks onto that long-term coverage, we want to set in statute a cap of $30 for Minnesotans to continue to have that guaranteed affordable coverage. Those eligible, as I mentioned, are those most at risk. The uninsured, folks that are underinsured and have huge out-of-pocket costs for their insulin, and Minnesotans on Medicare that have large out-of-pocket costs. And in terms of funding, this bill is funded through a combination of public dollars to largely set this program up and get it running, and a fee assessed on three insulin manufacturers. Keep in mind, the entire, virtually the entire supply of insulin in this country is controlled by three insulin manufacturers that had that did $80 billion in business last year with profits of over $20 billion. And this fee would simply ask a fraction of a fraction for those companies to contribute towards a solution and ensure that Minnesotans have access to affordable insulin. This program is ready to go. We've worked with a broad group of stakeholders, pharmacists, doctors, patients especially, and built a program that we believe can get up and running quickly. We would expedite this process by using a third-party administrator to administer a program in a way that they're already currently doing, processing claims for pharmacists, so that we have a program that works for pharmacists, works for doctors, and like I said, most importantly, works for patients. It should not be lost on us that had we passed Alec's bill in the 2019 session, it would be the law of the land. Minnesotans contemplating those gut-wrenching questions I mentioned would have Alec's law as a safety net when they need it most. And it's important to call out that since the legislative session adjourned, we've lost Minnesotans. Jessamiah David Scherer, 21 years old, from St. Louis Park, Minnesota, lost his life rationing his insulin. We know of another Minnesotan who chooses not to be identified that lost their life. This is deadly serious. And we have the power to take action, and we simply cannot lose another Minnesotan on our watch.
Thank you, Representative Howard. It looks like you've got some folks to co-present with you, and welcome back to the committee. I'm sorry that you have to be here again, and we can certainly turn it over to you. You can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
So good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Smith Holt, and this is my husband, James Holt Jr. And we are the parents of the late Alec Smith. And yes, we're unfortunately back here once again. So Alec died from rationing his insulin, and his body was discovered on the evening of June 27th, 2017, after aging off of my health plan on June 1st of 2017. Alec was only 26 years old, and he had only had type 1 diabetes for 2 short years. Our family was robbed. A very valuable piece of our lives was taken away from us, and Alec can never be replaced. In fact, his chair still sits vacant at our dining room table as a reminder of why we are still here fighting. His friends and family, we all continue to grieve. All around the world, people that are dependent on insulin are dying because they can't afford it. They can't afford their insulin, they can't afford their supplies, and they can't afford the treatment. People right here in Minnesota are dying, people like Alec and Jesse. Nearly half a million people in the state of Minnesota have diabetes. Not all of those require insulin, but many of them do. Over the past 20 years, insulin has increased over 1,200% without any justification. Insulin is currently the sixth most expensive liquid in the world, with a price tag of over $300 a vial, and most diabetics require multiple vials per month. And on top of that, require many costly diabetic supplies. People are struggling. Roughly one-fourth of all type 1s are rationing. That means that one in four type 1 diabetics are risking their lives because they can't afford the going rate of life that is set by the pharmaceutical industry. I am here today to encourage you to pass the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Bill. The first version of this bill was introduced on March 28th of 2018 by Representative Aaron Murphy. Since then, we have rewritten the bill. Advocates have worked side by side with legislators to make it the best possible bill. Advocates have shown up to hearings, shared their struggles. We've held many press conferences, and we have encouraged families to stand up and raise their voice because their lives and the lives of their loved ones are valuable. We need for quick action because we know that this is critical. We have neighbors, friends, and family, even strangers in Minnesota who are currently rationing their life-sustaining medication. They are causing long-term health complications and risking death. This bill should not take to the closing days of the session to pass. Further delays put our lives at risk. And I can guarantee you that somewhere in Minnesota, a type 1 diabetic today is rationing and may be dead tomorrow.
Thank you for your testimony. And again, I'm sorry for your loss. I see you have another presenter, Dr. Stephen Schondelmeyer.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Great. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. My name is Stephen W. Schondelmeyer. I am a professor at the University of Minnesota in pharmacy and pharmaceutical economics, but I'm here today as an individual representing myself and my views on this particular legislation. Insulin is a wonderful drug. Many people need it, use it, and their lives are saved because of it. But it's like many things in society. If you don't have access to it, it is worthless. It is worth less than worthless. It is worth your life. And so access becomes critical. There are a number of factors, as you know, to access. One is just, do you have the personal resources to afford something? Many of us are fortunate to have insurance in society, and if we have insurance, chances are we have coverage for insulin. But even there, the copays begin rising dramatically. This bill addresses that and puts an out-of-pocket cap on the copays, and I'm thankful to say Minnesota insurers have stepped up to help start this process by offering $25 a month or less as the out-of-pocket copay for insulin. They could change those policies tomorrow. They could change them next year. They could change them the year after that. So this discussion and debate has stimulated some action, but it may or may not be lasting action. It may or may not be a standardized policy across all plans. So this bill begins to standardize that across plans and set some limits. Secondly, I applaud the drug companies. They have expanded, stepped up, added a little more promotion to their patient assistance programs for insulin. That's a good thing. Those programs could go away tomorrow, or the day after, or the month after, or the year after. They're not guaranteed either. And often, I've been in this marketplace for pharmaceuticals for 45 years, and the drug companies are very good at stepping up when they're under the spotlight. And then they may step back when the spotlight fades. They may or may not. We can look at their track record, their pace, but patient assistance programs are useful, but they haven't met all the need, or we wouldn't have patients still dying today with absence of insulin. So you'll hear that, yes, we've improved the patient assistance programs, we're addressing the problem, but it doesn't assure that all patients get access to those drugs, and it hasn't solved the problem entirely. This bill, I think, is much more expansive, and it begins to standardize the program. Another comment I would make is this bill works with the existing healthcare delivery system, with physicians, pharmacists, current insurers, to fit into and work through those programs rather than creating a separate, entirely standalone system where the drug company ships the drug to the doctor and the doctor becomes the pharmacist and starts dispensing the drug to patients. Doctors do a great job of caring for their patients. And you'll have to ask doctors, but many of the physicians I've talked to say, I don't want to become the pharmacist, the dispenser. We need everybody in the system to play their role, and it would be a burden on the medical system to have to be the intermediary between the drug company and the patient. They're glad to see the patient, care for them, take care of their diabetes, prescribe the medications, make sure the patient's being monitored and doing well, which the physician traditionally does. But providing and dispensing the medication becomes critical. And insulin is not a medicine you can just keep on the back shelf in the doctor's office. It's a medication that has to be stored properly, refrigerated, and stored very properly. And again, this would require, if we went with systems that use physicians as the dispensers, we would have a lot of added capital costs in physicians' offices and other health systems to accommodate that. As you've heard today and before, that the price of insulin has gone up twofold to as much as tenfold over the last 8 to 10 years. Think for a minute, how many of you had that much increase in your personal income? Twofold to tenfold. If insulin was one of the items on your budget, wouldn't it take a much bigger bite out of your budget today than it did before? Now, I applaud drug companies and finding new drugs and discovery. Insulin is not new. It's been around a long time. We've paid for the R&D. We paid for the government investment in it. We paid for the innovation that's been delivered to the marketplace. This is a product that should be available at reasonable prices to consumers. Even the industry tells us that after they take into account all rebates and discounts, they only get about 30 cents on the dollar. That 68 to 70% of the money that's paid initially for insulin goes back out in rebates and discounts to insurers and pharmacy benefit managers and various other people along the way that are kind of, I like Reagan used to call it trickle-down economics. I would say the pharmaceutical market has a lot of trickle-out economics. The money trickles out before it gets down to the people who really need to have the savings. It gets spent on lots of other things. And in this case, what that tells us is the drug companies are only netting about 30 cents on the dollar they charge for insulin. If that's the case, if they can sell it directly, provide it directly to pharmacies and patients through physicians in this program, why couldn't they do that for 30 cents on the dollar? Now, I must tell you also, I help manage and advise a number of employers and insurers that pay for health care, and particularly insulin. And the cost of insulin really does track, if the list price goes up, the price of insulin to that payer will go up proportionately. And we've seen insulin prices go up 8 or 9 or 10% a year, twice a year for a number of years. The price increases have improved the last 2 or 3 years. I will acknowledge that, but they haven't gone down. Saying that the price increase of insulin is only 5% a year today instead of 10% a year isn't a decrease in price. It's a slowing in the rate of growth. It's still going up, and it's still high, and it's still as high as it was when it doubled, and it's still going up faster. But price increases have slowed a bit. But the point I would make with respect to price, with some of the insurers and employers, I look at the price that the employer is paying for the insulin, and some of them happen to have veterans as their employees. Fortunately, those veterans can use the VA facility to get their prescription filled. And I look at the price that the employer gets billed by the VA for the same insulin, and they get billed 5 to 10 cents on the dollar of what the employer has to pay through the normal channels for insulin. So here we have evidence from the drug companies themselves telling us that they only get 30 cents on the dollar net through the normal insurance system, and from the VA system showing us that the drug companies only get 5 to 10 cents on the dollar net for their insulin, and yet they're not sure they can help with this program. I'm not quite sure what the disconnect is. Actually, if they agreed to sell it to 50 cents on the dollar through this program, it seems like they'd be better off. I do have concerns about systems where each drug company can operate their own patient assistance program with their own rules and change those rules or take them away without notice. And I always have concerns about patient confidentiality, and there may be some in this bill, but I think there are equal or greater concerns with the drug companies requiring patients to prove their tax status, to prove their financial status, to disclose information to a patient assistance program that's like applying for a mortgage or something. It just is excessive. And so I think this bill really standardizes and puts in the hands of a common program the confidentiality of patient information, rather than putting it in the hands of the drug company that may want to switch the patient from insulin to another injectable anti-diabetic medicine that may cost more, may or may not be better. What will they do with that information? Will they use it for marketing, use it to sell to various patients their products? My point is there are many good features to this bill. It addresses a lot of the problems that are out there. Yes, the market has been responding and taking steps, but many of those steps, if not all of them, could disappear tomorrow. This bill, if passed, and if a program is worked out in the state of Minnesota with the legislature and with the cooperation of the manufacturers and physicians and pharmacists and nurses and patients, we can do something to help avoid more unnecessary deaths because of lack of insulin. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your presentation. And members, I think I hope you can stick around as questions might come up, but we'll try to move to public testimony and get through our list of public testifiers and then have member discussion. And so, yes, and if you want to get on the list, let Simon know. And So for folks in the audience, we have a list of people who have signed up to testify. And so I'll call up the first testifier, who is Malia Camara. And on deck, we'll have Catherine Commit for testifier. So if you're on deck, just be ready to move forward. And we'd like you folks to be able to stick to about 3 minutes apiece, if that's okay. I know it's not enough, but we want to be sure everybody gets to be heard. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Malia Camara. I live in Lakeville and I'm 17 years old. I was diagnosed with diabetes 14 years ago and I'm a senior in high school. So before I start talking about everything, I just want everybody to know what it's like to live in a day of a diabetic. The first thing I do when I wake up is I test my blood sugar, and then I have to wait. I have to pre-bolus, which is just waiting for my insulin to kick in. I eat, then I get ready for school. Once I'm at school, I continuously have to monitor my blood sugar to make sure it's not too high or too low. Then I go home, finish my homework, get ready to eat dinner, and go to bed. Throughout the night, sometimes I'll get waken up. Like this past week, I was waken up 3 times with low and high blood sugars. And no matter how tired I am the next day, I still have to get up and go to school. I'm here to testify in support of the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act. I am very concerned that when I go to college, I won't be able to afford my insulin when I get off of my parents' insurance. At some point, will I have to choose, do I pay for my college or do I pay for my insulin? We all need certain things to stay alive. Even if you're not diabetic, your body needs insulin. So why are we having to pay so much for ours? Why do some of us have to ration and lose our lives over it? Just like we all need water and food to live, I can last about 21 days without food and 7 days without water, but I will literally die if I go more than a few hours without my insulin. I do not want to die. Why should I have to choose whether I buy my food or I buy my insulin? At 17 years old, why am I even here expressing my concern about living or dying? I should be talking about all the A's I get in school, all the colleges I want to go to, the family that I want to have in my future. Not how I'm afraid to die. What's going to happen when I'm standing there looking at my last bit of insulin with a high blood sugar, knowing that if I use it, it will take up all of it? Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story, and thanks for your testimony. We really appreciate you being here. Catherine Commit, and then on deck, Sherry Wiltrout. Welcome to the committee. State your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Catherine Commit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the association that represents Minnesota's seven nonprofit health plans. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this very important issue. We appreciate all of the work that Representative Howard and so many others have put into finding solutions to making sure Minnesotans have access to life-saving insulin. We share that same goal, and that is why the council supports the majority of this bill. However, we do have concerns with the language in Section 3 that would place a permanent cap on insulin copays at $30 per month. This past year, Minnesota's nonprofit health plans independently and voluntarily stepped up to offer products in the fully insured market with low or no copays for a variety of insulin products. A number of factors affected how each health plan arrived at this decision. And I would like to just make an edit to my testimony, and Representative Howard indicated there were about four plans that have done that. It's actually five plans that have participated, and it's all the plans in Minnesota who are my members who participate in the fully insured market. Again, a number of factors affected how each health plan arrived at this decision. The main reason was to promote adherence, that is, to help patients successfully manage and control diabetes, prevent complications, and improve their quality of life. This decision was driven largely by the data showing how the rising cost of insulin has created an affordability crisis that threatens the health and well-being of patients. According to the Healthcare Cost Institute, between 2012 and 2016, the drug industry doubled the price of insulin. The increasing price of insulin has led some patients to put their own health at risk. The health plans did not make this decision to satisfy shareholders or maximize profits. They made this decision because, as nonprofit health plans, it is the right thing to do. Making sure people with diabetes have access to affordable insulin means they are much more likely to take their insulin regularly and stay healthy. Premiums are expensive because healthcare is expensive. Because the prices of healthcare and drugs like insulin continue to rise, insurance premiums also rise. Today, more than 23 cents out of every healthcare dollar goes to pay for prescription drugs, more than the cost of inpatient hospital care. As health plans, we work to keep premiums as low as possible with limited but important tools such as formularies, copays, and cost sharing, all of which are designed to help manage the growing costs by minimizing the impact on premiums. Caps on copays limit that flexibility and do not address the real problem. The price of insulin is too high. And given the pattern of price increases driven by the pharmaceutical industry, the health plan's ability to utilize their existing tools and adjust accordingly, if I could, Madam Chair, I'm almost finished. And given the pattern of price increases driven by the pharmaceutical industry, the health plan's ability to utilize their existing tools and adjust accordingly is more important than ever. The drug companies have given no indication that the price of insulin will ever be lower. And past behavior predicts the price of insulin will continue to rise. In fact, the pharmaceutical industry recently announced yet another round of increases in their prices for drugs just this year. And it's only February 11th. If the insulin copays are mandated to be capped at $30 without any other controls on the price of insulin, health plans will have to raise premiums. This lets drug companies off the hook and doesn't address the real problem. The price of insulin is too high. Mandated copay caps will ultimately lead to higher health insurance premiums for everyone, making coverage less affordable and resulting in more people becoming uninsured. Instead, we urge members to focus on the root cause of this problem, the price of insulin as set by the drug companies. We look forward to working with Representative Howard and others on developing innovative solutions that put downward pressure on the price of insulin. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Sherry Wiltrout, and followed by Ms. Wiltrout, we've got Sharon Lamberton on deck.
Madam Chair, for the, when we have questions.
Representative Garofalo.
We have questions for individual testifiers. Do you want to wait until everyone's done testifying and call them back down? Is that your preference?
Representative Garofalo, we'll call them back down. Yeah, we'll get through all the public testimony. Thank you for clarifying. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and
proceed.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. My name is Sherry Wiltrout. I am a mom of two type 1 diabetic daughters. They're 14 years old. They are athletes. They are straight A students. They are amazing, and they are my heroes. We hear a lot of talk about the cost of a vial of insulin, and I want to change that conversation up just a little, if you'll bear with me. I want to talk about a month's worth of insulin for my two daughters. So you talk about a vial worth of insulin being close to $300. That's 1 month. And this is what 1 month of insulin costs when you don't have health insurance. Wait, I'm not, oh, it's falling out. I'm not quite done yet. There's a little bit more.
Back away, Lush.
My family's really lucky right now. We have great health insurance, and we were one of the ones that benefited from the copay caps, voluntary copay caps that the insurance company has put on our insulin costs. So rather than walking to the pharmacy with this every month, we were able to do $20 to pay for this insulin. And I'm so grateful for that. But I have to keep this in my bank account just in case, because I never know when that could change. It's a voluntary copay cap, and it could change tomorrow, because the insurance companies could decide we can't afford that anymore because they're covering this right now, or their version of it, whatever that might be. It is vital that we do something to prevent this from being my reality every month, because I can do it maybe once, maybe twice, then my mortgage isn't going to get paid. We've got to change this. I've been watching Alec's bill from the beginning. When it left Nicole's kitchen table, I've seen the versions all the way along, and you guys have a great bill here. This bill will save lives in Minnesota. It's got awesome compromises. I see many things that were taken from the Republican bills. Senator Pratt had an awesome urgency bill that I see big pieces of put into this that's a more long-term solution to help people get through the whole year. You guys have compromised with the eligibility guidelines. You've compromised with adding in Medicare patients. There have been a lot of compromises already made, and I want to commend Mike and the working group on the compromises that already exist, and I push that you continue to make those compromises, both sides, Republicans and Democrats, so that this is not my reality. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
And Madam Chair, it's your committee.
Representative Garofalo.
Can I also just say that my bag costs more than my car right now?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, it is certainly your committee, and it's your prerogative to have testifiers talk and then have questions come afterward. But the last two testifiers have said something that is just factually inaccurate regarding.
Representative Garofalo, you will have an opportunity to call them back if you would like to.
As long as members are keeping an open mind. Thank you.
Next up is, again, thank you for your testimony. Sharon Lamberton, followed by Jason Broberg, who will be on deck. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the House Commerce Committee, good afternoon. My name is Sharon Lamberton. I'm with the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. It represents 38 member pharmaceutical companies making life-saving treatments and cures throughout the country, three of our members of which make insulin products. Our companies have invested over $900 billion since 2000 in new cures and life-saving treatments. I'm also a registered nurse, and diabetes is near and dear to my heart. My mom has type 2 diabetes, and I've watched her for 30 years lose her eyesight, have cardiovascular disease, and lose feeling in her hands and feet. I have also witnessed her treatments change over the past 30 years. Insulin is not the same as it was in 1923. We now have inhalable insulins and a lot of other great cures, but more is needed. I'm happy to see that there's over 170 new medicines in development in the pipeline, but it is an expensive and risky process to come up with new medicines. It's $2.6 billion, 12 to 15 years, and only 12% of those medicines make it. But given the complexity of chronic disease of diabetes and the day-to-day challenge of managing it, patients should not have to worry about affording their insulin. It doesn't matter that we make life-saving treatments and cures if patients can't access them. This is why today's conversation is so very important. We in the pharmaceutical industry believe it's our responsibility not just to make sure that we make these medicines, but that they can afford them. That's why we have pharmaceutical assistance programs, three of which are made by our manufacturer companies. Furthermore, we just released the medication assistance tool, www.mat.org, which represents 900 public or private programs that represent one-stop shopping for all of those assistance programs today. And they're available to help patients today. But right now, patients' out-of-pocket costs for their medicines continue to increase despite growing discounts and rebates paid to insurers and PBMs. These discounts aren't shared with the patient. That means patients can actually pay more for their medicines than their insurer pays. For insulin, negotiations can lower the net price of insulin up to 70%. But instead of solving for these insurance designs, respectfully, House File 3100 contemplates creating this state-run assistance program, but it's largely duplicative of a lot of the patient assistance programs we have available today. And it does so by assessing a fee on insulin prescriptions filled by diabetes patients, presumably with health insurance coverage with manageable cost sharing. It ignores the fact that insurers have already made adjustments on copay caps, as we heard, five of them to date have lowered their copays to zero to 25. But it also, we have concerns with it violating a lot of our constitutional concerns. We think there are other solutions that we'd love to work with the committee about, one of which is sharing the rebates. Second of which we would like to talk about is more disease management programs to help save money for better diabetes management programs. And we would also like to talk about how all plans could fix their copays, have no deductibles, and these type of solutions are key solutions that would help patients today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Jason Broberg, followed by Sarah Ginsburg. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jason Broberg. I live in St. Paul with my wife and my wife Jessica and our four-year-old daughter. I have type 1 diabetes. I'm here to testify in support of the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act. I was diagnosed 3 years ago when I was 40 years old. I have no family history of diabetes, and I was generally in good health when I was diagnosed. I mention that because I think it's important to emphasize that type 1 can onset at any age, and through no fault of the affected person. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, and I sit on that organization's political council. And in that capacity, I'm happy to report that MAPE also strongly supports this legislation. As a member of MAPE, I have good health insurance benefits. And frankly, I haven't had a difficulty affording my insulin and other supplies. So at least from a perspective of my personal immediate need, I will not personally benefit from this legislation. However, in my life, I have also experienced both unemployment and high deductible health insurance plans, which are just two of the variety of factors that can make insulin very unaffordable for a diabetic. Accordingly, I am aware that my ability to afford life-sustaining insulin is dependent on factors that, at the end of the day, diabetics like myself cannot control. Because of the immorally high cost of insulin and the barriers to obtaining it, if I lost my benefits today, I would be forced to ration insulin almost immediately, and my remaining days on this planet would be instantly numbered. At the same time, the insulin manufacturers would continue to receive truly remarkable profits. This legislation will provide a safety net. It will save lives. Now is always the right time to do the right thing. In this case, the right thing to do is to pass this bill. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for sharing your story and for your testimony. Sarah Ginsburg. Welcome to the committee. You can get settled and state your name for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Ginsburg. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm honored to testify today on the topic so important to me on this first day of session. I've had type 1 diabetes for 50 years, and my son was diagnosed at age 2, and he just turned 26 this summer. Mm-hmm. Here are some pieces of my story. Try to imagine coming home with two children in the car to find that the electricity has been turned off and there's no other way to get in the house. Imagine, if you can, being on bed rest for months, losing your income, having type 1 diabetes, and not being able to afford your supplies of insulin. This was a financial disaster that left us in debt for years, and we almost lost our house. Imagine not being able to afford insulin for two members. I would have used only my son's leftovers from the month before, and this occurred many months. I remember so clear crying at the pharmacy several times, asking to just buy one pen. One pen was not available to buy at that time. They are only sold in a package of 5. On the most holy day in my religion, a foreclosure was initiated on our house, and we were making a decent income. Picture this. Me sitting on my toddler, forcing a tube of frosting down his throat. What kind of thoughts did he have during these formidable years of his early life? My son is now 26 years of age. Just to hear this age still makes me cringe. He aged off our now good family plan. He lost his job 2 weeks before his 26th birthday this summer, entering into the first step of being uninsured. Every parent of a diabetic is scared beyond words for this birthday to arrive. I will tell you, these situations finally changed after we shut down our family business and had a different insurance plan. But my fears for my son aging off our family plan is ongoing and intense. Having diabetes means the most important thing in your life is your insulin and your health insurance, but not any insurance. It has to be good insurance. I certainly believe that to get good insurance, you need to have a good education and a good job, having then the ability to afford the monthly payments, the deductible, the copay. The meaning of insurance means protection from financial loss. One day my son told me about Alec. My life changed that moment. My greatest fears was someone's reality, dying from lack of insulin, and will my son be able to keep up with the financial demands of type 1 diabetes? There is nothing that can save him if he cannot afford his insulin, and I will never stop fighting for him. The dictionary explains the word allow as to permit, to fail, to prevent. And in America, we allow people to die if they can't afford their insulin. We allow Sanofi, Eli Lilly, and Novo Nordisk to increase their price in step with each other. Failing to prevent this from happening means we allow it. They make billions while they increase their prices in step. I don't want my son to have the burden that I did. I don't want your son, your daughter, mom, dad, or the next person you know who becomes diabetic struggle and be hostage to these manufacturers and insurance plan. The word insurance is an oxymoron. It means to save someone from financial loss. Maybe your daughter or son will want to marry a type 1 diabetic. My mother-in-law came to my husband and laid out the future of a potential life that is financially and has health risks in the future, and I would have done the same. I'm a very private person. This is very difficult for me. But if we don't tell our stories, change will never happen. Did you know that a bottle of insulin, 10 milliliters, is equal to 2.03 teaspoons? I'm asking you to please pass the Alec Smith Insulin Affordability Act. One day, it might save my son or someone you know. Thank you so much.
Ms. Wiltrout, can you repeat the teaspoons for me, please, before you go?
10 milliliters.
10 milliliters.
In a bottle.
Equal to how many teaspoons?
2.03 teaspoons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. At this time, I've reached the end of the list that I have. If anybody wants to come forward from the audience who has not been heard, who has additional information, now's your time. I see there's somebody, another testifier. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Annette Gentile, and I have been type 1 diabetic for 32 years. I was diagnosed at 19. I'm on disability. I also have heart disease, one lung, all because of my insulin, because I had rationed my insulin and have had other health issues. I receive $1,200 a month for my disability. My insulin costs are $900. That leaves me $300 to put food on my table, to put a roof over my head, and my 17-year-old son, to buy other necessities in life, gas, to get him to school. And I can't afford this. The Alex Smith bill would help me immensely. There's been times when I haven't bought food, haven't bought gas. I would skip buying my heart, depression, and other medications that I need because I need to buy my insulin. Because I can't afford that, I have rationed and gone into DKA and been hospitalized twice in the last 2 years. I used to be ashamed of my situation, and I didn't tell anyone, not my family, not my friends, or anyone. And now I know, after meeting with Nicole and other advocates, I know I have to tell my story. In fact, more than a quarter of the people with type 1 diabetes in the U.S. ration their insulin. With Alex's bill, this wouldn't happen, and we wouldn't lose anyone else. It's not our fault, and type 1 diabetes isn't our fault and shouldn't be this way. In the last decade, the cost of insulin has tripled, while the big drug companies rake in billions in profits. We are getting hurt while the big pharmaceutical companies are making billions, and we are not backing down. We need this bill to pass now. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for sharing your story. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to be heard on this bill? Thank you. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Maria Isa Perez Hedges. I am a mother, an artisan in this great state of Minnesota, and also am a type 1 diabetic for over 16 years. I have rationed my insulin. I have been at the pharmacy all late hours of the night just trying to figure out how I can be able to get one vial in these 16 years. I've experienced so many of these stories. I've had my family members come up to say, what can we do? I've been grateful to get some help in the state as well, but those times fluctuate, as we know. Those times are now. Now that I have a 10-month daughter, my goal is her. She is the best piece of art I've created. And the steps that it's taken as a type 1 diabetic and the money that it's cost to make sure that I am healthy has been insane to recognize. I don't have anything written up. This is coming from my heart as I rushed over here because I know how important it is for all of us Minnesotans, not just type 1 diabetics, because we all know someone or we all don't want to see another Minnesotan die. It shouldn't have to be that when I went to tour in a foreign country and I was scared because my insulin vials were in heat, that the price of insulin there was free. I was scared that I wasn't going to be able to get insulin, and I couldn't believe how easy it was for me to go to a hospital in Cuba and get insulin for free. At the time when I've been there before here, when I ran out of insulin at my month capacity of what insurance can help you with, and they want to charge you more than my own rent at the time. I'm here saying these are facts. These are true stories. I don't want to be someone who has to be another number because I've had to ration insulin or see another child or my nephews have to be another number on that list because their parents can't afford insulin to stay alive. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story and for your testimony. Looks like we've got somebody else from the public who wishes to be heard. Welcome to the committee. And you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Leah Greenside. Thank you so much for giving me just 1 minute. I just wanted to make one quick comment about the voluntary copay caps that the Minnesota's insurers implemented this summer. I was very excited to hear about the $25 copay cap that my insurance company, we have an individual plan through Minsure, was going to be offering. However, soon after the copay caps were announced, I got a phone call from the pharmacy director from my insurance company. This is what happens when you show up to enough of these and talk, you get these kinds of calls. And he informed me that unfortunately my family would not get insulin for $25 a month despite buying our insurance through Minsure because my daughter's insulin is not on our plan's formulary. There are two fast-acting types of insulin, Humalog and Novolog. Novolog was going to be covered. Humalog, which works better for my daughter and is what our doctor has prescribed for her, we still have to pay close to the full retail price for that product. So that's why I strongly support the copay cap provision of this bill. It not only caps the price at $30 per month, but it also applies to all insulins. This allows doctors and patients to use whichever insulin is best for them rather than having to make that really difficult choice of choosing between an insulin that is affordable or an insulin that works better. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to be heard on this bill? Welcome to the committee. The pages can distribute the handout if you want to put it on the desk there.
Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Davis, and I'm the president of the Earth Protector Environmental Group. And there's no question that this is an important issue, and I support any help that people suffering with insulin can get. But it's sad to see the legislature starting off with a bickering issue because it seems that the Democrats and Republicans are at kind of opposite ends of who's going to pay and how much and when. So it's back to a money issue again, and it always comes down to the money. And that's what I want to talk about a minute, that every day that goes by, the Federal Reserve is pumping billions and trillions of dollars created out of thin air in a computer into the economic system to support the skyrocketing stock market and at 29,000 point Dow Jones. So what's critical about it is, sure, this is an important issue to get people the insulin that they need, but we've got crumbling roads, cost of living increases, rents going up, people having a really tough time. So what I'm offering to you is something I've been working on for 10 years, is the money plan of how to bring money into circulation without debt and without borrowing or taxing.
Mr. Davis, I want to please focus the testimony on House File 3100. So if you've got comments on House File 3100, that is what we are going to discuss today. We've got a limited amount of time. I want to be sure that we are focused on the bill.
I understood that it would be 3 minutes to
comment
do that
on House File 3100.
Right. So what you need to do with this 3100 is you need to meet with the Republicans and get this out of the way before it takes all the wind out of this legislation, this Senate, this legislature session right at the beginning. So they have a difference of opinion on 3100 than you have. So get with them and compromise immediately and get it out of the way. You've already had it for a couple of years, according to some of the other testifiers. And what you're getting now, because you're the Commerce Committee, and that deals with commerce. So I came here to bring the information to you. I won't go over my 3 minutes, and I'm done now. So support the money plan and then we can have money for everybody and everything. That's wealth, not debt. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to be heard on House File 3100? Seeing no one, we can move to member discussion. Representative Howard, I believe that you indicated that you did you want to speak now or did you want to wait till the end?
We go to questions.
Okay, excellent. So we'll start with my list. Representative Haley.
I didn't know I would be first. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Surprise.
First of all, I just wanted to thank the Smith-Holt family for all their work, and thank you, Representative Howard, for your work, and the Senate and House committees that have been working all summer. That's a heavy lift to continue on those task force and the work that you've done. And I would say to the Smith-Holt family the impact that they've made because they've kept this issue front and center. And so many things have changed because of their advocacy. And as a mother, I've advocated for change for things in my kid's life as well. So I want to point out my respect for that process and for all of you. We all want to provide access to no-cost or low-cost insulin for Minnesotans that need it. I think everybody in the room can agree with that statement. So my comments aren't personal. It's more about the pieces of the proposal and how this will work. And I want to frame it in, I've had a sinus infection for a week, and so I went to same-day clinic on Saturday and said, I'm heading into session, and I really need to feel good. You know, can you help me? So after getting a Z-Pack, the physician who was an internal medicine provider said, can I ask you something? Can I ask you about that insulin bill? And I said, well, it's probably going to be the first thing we do when I get in on Tuesday. And he proceeded to give me his opinion. And this is a medical provider who's been, in the practice for his entire life. He's probably in his early 60s, I would say. And his wife is a diabetic. So he said, I just have some thoughts for you, both as a practitioner and somebody who cares about my patients, and as a spouse, that I understand this insulin issue. And his concerns were as follows. He said, I'm worried that this will increase prices for everybody else that pays for their insulin. We've seen this with other things in healthcare, that when we sort of subsidize one section, the cost has to move somewhere, and that will just shift. So he was very concerned about his patients that are paying for health insurance and again, are fortunate enough to have good private insurance, but this cost shift was his big concern. His second concern is that he said, and again, he was talking about his patients. He said, no patient should ration their insulin. If a patient calls me, if a patient comes to my office, we have programs. He said he's followed this debate all summer long, and he said he was so impressed with how the industry has come together, the health plans have come together, and it's remarkable, really. Every health plan, every nonprofit health plan in the state of Minnesota has rallied around this issue and now has, I think $30 is the max, $25 or $30 maximum copays. So he was thrilled and said, my patients that I work with every month can now access those programs. In addition, he said, we have these coupon, programs from the manufacturers that patients can access. And that too, again, kudos to you advocates, because all these things have changed in the past year because of the work you've done. And the last thing he said is, or two more things. He said, I'm concerned about another government-run healthcare program. He said, we've struggled with MinSure rollouts before. So when I saw that in the proposal, Barb, that concerns me, that we're adding administration that really doesn't have a proven track record. And he was concerned about patients getting caught up in an administrative process that wasn't ready for prime time. When they really just call him and in his office, he'll make sure that they get taken care of. And then his last comment, again, as an internal medicine provider, he said, what about the next drug? We have lots of drugs that patients are on for life-saving conditions. What about the next drug that people come in and say, I can't afford this? Shouldn't we be looking at the cost of pharmaceuticals as a whole and addressing how do we bring down drug costs as a whole? So I wanted to share that. That was my discussion with a medical practitioner over the weekend.
I appreciate the work. I appreciate what's gone into this, and I think we have solutions on the table. So I think everybody can walk away and be proud of where we're at and being able to provide no cost, almost low or low cost insulin to the Minnesotans who truly need it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I want to talk about each of those points that the provider raised. I want to start with the last one, this notion of, like, what about the next drug? And I've heard this has come up, but more so as an excuse not to take action on an issue that affects, as we've heard, tens or hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. I mean, we, every single one of us, have a connection to somebody that has diabetes or type 1 diabetes. And the sort of, let's just solve the broader problem and kick the can down the road, frankly, that's not going to cut it for the people that have testified that are here today. And I know that's not exactly how you intended it, but I just raise it because I've heard that as a reason not to pass this bill from other folks. And I just want to call that out, that there's no reason that we can't and should move forward with addressing the emergency folks are facing and also deal with the broader challenges of folks that can't afford prescription drugs. Just to deal with these one by one, the notion of the increased cost of others, that's an argument we hear from the pharmaceutical companies, that if you do this to us, you know, we're going to raise prices. Well, newsflash, they're going to raise prices anyways. They have raised their prices year after year after year. And if we assess a minute fee on their profits, I don't think that is going to affect how they do business, these three global companies. And to the extent it is, they're probably going to raise their prices again. So I don't think that's a factor that we should consider. The notion that the industry is addressing this in terms of the health plans, and that is a good thing. It's a very good thing. But I just want to call out that those are for those do not cover folks on, you know, ERISA plans or employer. The largest share of our market cannot benefit from those capped copays. And so I've heard from several patients that checked with their insurer right after these announcements were made, and they found out, no, this wouldn't affect them, and they're still going to have to pay huge out-of-pocket costs for their insulin. So while we're glad that that piece has been taken care of, and this bill would indicate that those folks wouldn't, you know, if your copays are capped, you wouldn't be eligible for this program. But if you can't pay your out-of-pocket costs, you are included. And then the last point I want to make, based on the questions, was the notion of a government-run program. Right now, we have the only patient assistance programs we have are pharmaceutical-led programs, and they don't work. They haven't worked. We have two of the largest health systems in Minnesota don't even utilize the drug company manufacturer assistance programs, and they've told us the reason why is because they're inconsistent for patients. Sometimes they get the wrong supply of their insulin. The timeliness is an issue. All the manufacturers offer different plans that change, and they're challenging for patients to utilize. And while I am glad that we've seen some movement on paper for these companies, we're going to have to see a track record of success and for them to be utilized. And frankly, the credibility of these companies with patients is so low that there can be no confidence that right now these programs in itself are a solution. And to the solution we have before us, it's one that's been vetted with, you know, hours and hours of work of the stakeholders that do this, and we're setting up a program that doesn't involve a gigantic heavy lift in terms of an IT build. We want to use existing channels so that this can be set up quickly and utilized by patients. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Representative Swazinski. Oh, I'm sorry. We're all out of practice here. Do you have a follow-up, Representative? I just had a clarification, and then I know there are a lot of other colleagues want to speak, so we don't need to go back and forth, Representative Howard. But my understanding is that the copay cap option to ERISA plan businesses is there so that those employers would have the option as well. So maybe that's something we can talk about offline,
sure,
but I'll let my other hand it over to you. You've got a long list of folks. Thanks. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would be kind of in general. Appreciate
the folks are coming forward to share your stories on this particular issue. And this first question is to Representative Howard. So obviously I didn't sit on the, I know there was a working group this summer. Can it, does this bill reflect the totality of that work, or is there differences in the bills that are potentially moving forward, or what's the product here that we have?
Madam Chair, Representative Swedinski, very good question. The biggest difference is the bill that we passed during session, it was an emergency insulin bill focused squarely on let's solve that emergency at the pharmacy if someone can't afford their insulin, they need it right now. In subsequent months, the Republican Senate produced a plan that was focused more so on the longer term. You know, how do we transition someone from an emergency to a stable, affordable care for insulin? So this bill adds an entire component that is the product of that concept from the Senate Republican. And I'll note as well, we've improved the emergency component of this bill from the bill we had in session due to bipartisan ideas and efforts. And I particularly want to call out Senator Jensen and Senator Abler, who helped provide an improved streamlined path so that that moment in the pharmacy we're able to get people an emergency supply of insulin. So this really is the product of the Democratic ideas and Republican ideas. Obviously, the Republican Senate doesn't, there's still space between us for an agreement, but it's a product of that work.
Okay. Representative Swedinski, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just Representative Howard, just kind of looking, what is your estimate of, I mean, know that from a fiscal note, where that sits, and then, you know, the fees and whatnot to do that, where are we estimating some of that is going to be at?
And Representative Howard, I will remind everybody this is not a finance committee, and we will be going to a finance committee. Okay. So
I
want to be I just want to be sure to manage our expectations, because yeah, I think that work is continuing to be done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can retract it if you like.
Madam Chair, I'll answer briefly. We are getting an updated fiscal note, in part because this bill reflects some of that bipartisan work, but we hope to have it soon.
Thank you.
And Representative, go ahead, Representative Swedinski.
No, go ahead. You're the chair. You go.
I
say something. I don't want to get in your way, huh?
I just, as a follow-up, one of the things I think that Representative Howard might be able to speak to, because I think you, Representative Swedinski, raised a really important question. It's like, what has happened since we were all last year together? And it is, this is the product of hours and hours and hours of work by many, many people, many stakeholders, many representatives, many senators from both sides of the aisle. And so I don't think it can be underemphasized how much work has gone into this. Representative Howard is too modest, but I have been part of some of this, and it's exhausting. It's been really a heavy lift from everybody involved, and so appreciate that work. And I just want you guys to have that picture.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would be a question maybe to the folks that you know, went out of their comfort zone and came up to the table. Appreciate that. But you know, obviously this is a complicated place, and there, you know, you pull a string here and something else happens. To the folks that are affected by this, it was brought up a couple times, like, you know, there's a lot of profits in pharmaceutical companies and this and that. If we were able to come up with a compromise that, you know, because as a conservative, I'm always a little concerned about raising taxes and raising fees. If we could come up with a program that took existing dollars that was in government to create a program that addressed this emergency that could happen earlier and maybe use, you know, the provider tax or some other form of funding, would that be preferable as maybe a delay, or are we intent on raising a tax and fee to do this from the folks that came up and talked about it? Like, because if we want something to happen, if it, you know, makes it a little bit easier on folks to vote for it or help it, like what are your feelings?
Representative Howard.
To find compromise and whatnot.
So my question, or I'm sorry, Ms. Holtzmith.
Smith-Holt.
Sorry.
So my question to you is, are you saying you do not want pharma to contribute to this program?
Representative Swedinski.
No, I'm asking a general question to say, if there are folks that have an issue with the potential of raising taxes and, you know, say it's $1 billion, whatever it is, to spread costs around or using existing funds, what is it?
Well, we've never talked about raising taxes.
Ms. Smith-Holt.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
Proceed. So we've never discussed raising taxes. It's holding pharmaceutical companies accountable.
Okay. So if we, Madam Chair.
Kaczynski.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So if we could come up with compromise that created the program, that essentially saved lives, so that folks that wouldn't have to ration, but it came with existing dollars that's already in government, we would say no, but we could rather let's fight for one that had these companies that are making the product pay for it. We'd rather that's the I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Representative Howard, would you like to discuss the compromise that was reached on funding?
Sure. Madam Chair, I'll just sort of comment. You know, I think the bill we have here is that compromise. We have, our original bill was funded fully through the drug manufacturers. And that's out of the belief that we think these three big drug manufacturers from out of state should bear this burden, not Minnesota taxpayers, which is why it's interesting from the conservative perspective that some folks might want to stick this on Minnesota taxpayers instead of drug manufacturers. But out of an abundance of trying to find a compromise, we've included public funding to set this program up. And largely, we're just asking the insulin manufacturers to contribute cover the cost of the insulin that they produce and have raised the price and have, as I mentioned, profit quite a bit off of. But we should find a compromise, and we think a shared solution, one that includes both public resources and insulin manufacturers, is a way to reach a compromise.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question was more focused to the folks that came up. Sure. I understand that's kind of how you felt. Wanted to see if anyone else that came up and talked about it, if they, what way you'd like to, if you're willing. We're just having a conversation about a bill that's very important, and if we're trying to get it to solve an emergency. If that would be a stumbling block worth saying, hey, let's do this instead.
It looks like Ms. Greenside is ready to answer that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Having the state pay for the emergency insulin program would absolve the insulin companies from having to take responsibility preventing insulin emergencies. So if we have this fee on the insulin companies like proposed in this bill, it forces the manufacturers to ensure that their existing programs work well for Minnesotans so that they don't end up in the emergency side of the equation. And I think it aligns interests in a way that helps protect public health. If we pay for it with state dollars, there's no reason that the insulin companies need to continue to improve their programs and ensure that they work for all patients. So I think that the best solution is one in which we align our interests and make sure that we're holding those companies accountable for the programs they're offering and make it the burden on them to prevent insulin emergencies. And if they don't do that, then they're going to have to pay.
Representative Swazinski, do you want to wrap up your questions? I know that there's a few other people on the list, so if you want to, I don't know if you're getting the answer you're looking for.
Yeah, just if anyone else wanted to share, I'd be open to it, but thank you.
Next on the list is Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Howard, when I read this bill originally, there was a prohibition on rebates, and I can't find it in this language. I'm sure I'm just missing it. Can you tell me where it's at?
Yeah, it is in there.
Representative Howard.
Hold on. It's on line 2.4, the prohibiting the use of rebates in the contract with the third-party administrator. And actually, this is comfort language. The third-party administrator duties that we'd be requesting here don't really involve, the negotiation about price setting and rebates, but we've put that in there as sort of comfort language. We'd really be just asking a third-party administrator to process the claims, if that makes sense.
Madam Chair,
Representative
Howard, so the DFL narrative today is big, bad pharmaceutical companies are stuffing money in their pockets, and they're causing insulin patients to die. These selfish multinational corporations are making billions of dollars in profits, and they need to pay their fair share. I get the narrative. It's factually inaccurate, but I understand your narrative. Can you just tell me
When you're factoring in that the pharmaceutical industry isn't making a contribution to this, do you include the $6 million of insulin they currently give away to Minnesotans? Is that just water under the bridge, or do you include that as part of the they're not doing anything in Minnesota?
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Goffalo, first I'm offended that you talk about this DFL narrative. We have Minnesotans that are coming here and putting their lives, sharing painful stories, and that's the narrative we should be caring about today as this body, Minnesotans that are confronted with the choice of whether they can afford their insulin or not. Secondly, all we're saying is that manufacturers have a financial stake in paying for insulin. And to the pharmaceutical companies, I know that that's part of their talking points that you'd like to bring forward. One other that we heard from the pharmaceutical lobbyist was about R&D. I just want to call out in particular that Sanofi, one of the three insulin manufacturers, announced last month that they've suspended R&D in the insulin market. And I just want to call out that, I think Dr. Schonelmeyer mentioned the case, in terms of insulin, there's been very little R&D on this product. Meanwhile, the price has increased 1,200%. And where is the financial incentive for these companies to do R&D on insulin? This is a cash cow for them, and it has been. And all we're saying is we should have a shared solution and have the state and insulin manufacturers have a role in solving this.
So, Madam
Representative Groffalo.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Howard. So to be clear, you said you were offended that I pointed out that you referenced $20 billion in pharmaceutical profits. You're offended that I pointed out that you said that. I didn't say it. You're the one who brought up the Bernie Sanders class warfare, rah, rah, rah. It wasn't me. You did it. Second of all, you referenced the doctor in your testimony just now. The doctor also said that 70% of the revenue being paid to insulin doesn't go to the pharmaceutical industry. Do you agree with his statement, or do you disagree with that?
Madam Chair,
Representative Groffalo, we're not going to do a cross-examination, but...
No, it's fine.
Representative
but Madam Chair, he said he just made
Representative
a statement...
Representative Howard actually has the floor.
Yeah, thank you. The challenges of our drug pricing crisis in Minnesota are broad, and there are many actors that play a role. Drug manufacturers, the PBMs, and this issue with rebates, and we should try to solve those problems. And every actor in the prescription drug system should have a stake in this. We passed a very strong PBM reform bill last session, and that is an important piece to make sure that we're addressing that piece of the equation. I've already mentioned the health carriers, many of them stepped up. And this bill is a way for insulin manufacturers to step up as well.
So, Madam
Representative Groffalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Howard, I believe I heard him say 70% of the costs of insulin are not going to the pharmaceutical industry. Did I hear that correctly?
Representative Howard.
I've heard that statistic used before, usually from the drug manufacturers, but I don't want to speak for the doctor.
Oh, okay. So, Madam Chair,
Representative Groffalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Switching gears to another part, it's a term you've used here a couple of times. You've said the health plans have stepped up. And we heard testimony before from people who said that, you know, as if though this was some sort of an act of charity by the health plans. They were responding to public opinion. That's a load of garbage. The reason why they did it is because the law changed last year in Minnesota. Minnesota regulated health plans forced the insurers to take those pharmaceutical rebates that are paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. It forced them to give those rebates directly to the customers so insurance plans couldn't be making money off insulin anymore. This wasn't some benevolent act by the insurance companies. That's why they did it. Now, I understand that the DFL is offended when I point out that solution. I understand that people are upset that Senator Benson kind of tricked you guys into making her point, that the issue wasn't the pharmaceutical industry, it was the rebates being withheld from customers, and that's something you don't like to highlight. But is that a correct statement, that when we changed that law, that was a significant driving factor behind making sure that people were actually, that the insurance companies weren't making money off insulin anymore? Now those rebates had to go to the clients. Is that a fair statement?
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Groffalo, I've heard the exact impact of that legislation can be debated, but I would say if you believe that is that legislation created this, then I'm sure you have no trouble supporting the cost-sharing language in the bill. It would be simply codifying what is now standard practice because of as you mentioned, the Senator Benson's amendment. And so in some ways, that work of Senator Benson and her amendment informs why we have this legislation in this bill.
It looks like Ms. Commit has an answer as well. Ms. Commit.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. A couple of things I just wanted to respond to. It actually, one of the main reasons to make this change last summer was, in fact, to promote adherence, as I testified earlier, to help patients successfully manage and control their diabetes so that it would prevent complications and improve their quality of life. So I guess it is in the best interest of the health plans if that means there will be lower costs because people aren't going to the emergency room, they're not getting amputations, they're not losing their eyesight, and that sort of thing. So does that benefit the health plans? It actually benefits everybody who buys insurance because the price of insurance won't go up as much. The other thing I just wanted to mention regarding the rebates, in fact, in checking with all my health plans, they do get these rebates through the negotiations of their PBMs, and those rebates, the value of those rebates, are passed through in the form of lower premiums to their patients. Now, I also want to just cite, because I thought this question might come up, that there is a GAO report that was done last summer, and I happen to make just a couple of copies of the first page, which specifically says PBMs, because this was a review by the GAO on the use of pharmacy benefit managers and efforts to manage drug expenditures and utilization, specifically to talk about rebates. And in this report, the GAO says PBMs retained less than 1% of these rebates, passing the rest to the plan sponsors, meaning the health plans. Plan sponsors, in turn, use these rebates to help offset growth in drug costs, helping to control premiums for beneficiaries. It may not be the case in other states, but I can assure you in Minnesota that is the case. So if there's a page, then perhaps they can pass this out.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. And Representative Garofalo, we're going to need to move on, so if you want to wrap up, that'd be helpful.
Sure, but just so everyone heard that, insurance clients who are paying these super high amounts before, their dollars are being used to lower other people's premiums. They're not going to the pharmaceutical industry. You just said it.
Ms. Commit, did you need to
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, as I stated earlier in my testimony, premiums are so expensive because health care is so expensive. The price of insulin has gone up exponentially, and putting caps on the copays helps some people in the fully insured market. It doesn't address the problem for everybody else who has coverage through a large self-funded employer. That's something that we have to fix at the federal level. But when any rebates that come through as a result of negotiations between a PBM or the health plan and the drug and the drug company gets passed through in the form of lower premiums. If we are supposed to pay the rebates directly to those individuals who have insulin, that means the price of insurance goes up for everybody. Insurance is a large pool. Everybody is paying into the pool, and when people need care or coverage, some of it goes back out to pay for their services. That's how it works here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. And
Madam Chair, I will
Representative Garofalo,
I'll make a statement
on.
Rather than ask Representative Howard in the interest of time. But I do think it's important that we're talking about an emergency insulin program here. And I'm sure Representative Howard knows this, that the three manufacturers he's citing give away over $6 million in insulin in the state of Minnesota right now. They all have free programs available. So there is an emergency assistance program. In addition, for those who are covered by who are buying the Minnesota health plans, we see that when we highlighted the rebates and forced the rebates to be passed on to insulin consumers, not being used to be spread out across the system, that it worked. So Representative Howard, my advice to you is declare victory and go home. Declare victory. You have won. You have pointed out the problem. Now, if your goal is to demonize the pharmaceutical industry, you're going to fail because it's not factually accurate. 70% of the money doesn't go to the pharmaceutical industry. We've just had someone from the health plans testify that the extra money they were getting for insulin was above their cost. It was being used to lower premiums across the board. Declare victory.
Madam Chair.
Representative Howard.
We in this room are not going to declare victory until every single person has access to affordable insulin when they need it.
Yep. And
And Representative Graffa, we are going
Madam
to
Chair,
move on to the next.
It was my last question I was going
to
ask.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to comment on one piece. The
four people on the list.
The you mentioned the manufacturers and what they've donated. One challenge is the transparency. I met with all three of the manufacturers and had productive conversations about their current programming. One challenge is we haven't received a lot of Minnesota-specific data that to truly understand how these programs are serving Minnesotans. And it's not a talking point. Patients tell me time and time again about their personal experiences with these programs. And frankly, I put more trust in Minnesotans than these drug manufacturers.
So, final question for him was, and this is the last one, this is it.
Well, you know what, Representative, we are going to have to move on because I want other people to be able to ask their questions. And so I know you've had a fair amount of time on the floor, and I would ask you to follow up with Representative Howard offline.
I'll save the question for the floor if that's the way you want it.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so that Representative Garofalo understand that I never am offended when you bring up the good work that we do at the legislature. And if we helped one diabetic, that's good work. But I think we've helped, just in the conversations, we've helped hundreds, if not thousands, of diabetics by just bringing this bill forward. And when we finish with this bill and pass it and get, well, I'm not so sure we'll get agreement with the Senate. That's where my next question is coming from. We'll help thousands, and it's good work that we do here. I have seen some pretty substantial medical bills in the last 3 months, 4 months, and I am floored. I almost wish I was on Health and Human Services to make my case. And I've stayed away from that for 22 years. it's amazing what has happened. But I want to actually understand, you know, you've been in negotiations with this since last session. I think it's, what, 5 months or 6 months? 10 years ago, I managed to negotiate family law, some really substantial changes in less than 2.5 months. This is to put people who actually hate each other at that particular moment into the same room and negotiate through that. I'm shocked. So I negotiated with one of your negotiating partners last year, and we came into the conference committee $100 million apart, pretty much. And the chair of the Senate Jobs Committee essentially said, we're not getting a bill unless we come down to my number. And I worked 3 or 4 weeks on that, 12 hours a day. I know this bill has changed a lot, and my understanding is you've given up a lot in this particular bill to get where it's at. Can you give me some idea of how much you've had to give up just to get to this particular point from what the advocates are asking for?
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, it has been a long process in terms of working with and negotiating with the Senate, and of course it's not over. You know, we need to continue to work together. Where we've made moves and we've traded several offers back and forth, you know, we started with wanting manufacturers to fully pay this. We're moving towards public costs. We're using a metric for you know, who's going to be eligible that comes from an offer from the Republicans. And again, we started with an emergency program alone, and we take the Senate at their word and really even thought that their long-term plan is something of worth and works well in concert. And so it's been a long process, and it's still going to continue. But there's a lot of the bipartisan work is in this bill. And hopefully that should help us be closer to resolving it.
Representative Mahoney.
Do you see a resolution to this session?
Representative Howard.
There better be. I mean, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney. I am confident that we will reach a consensus. And what gives me the most confidence are all the advocates and Minnesotans in this room. It's their stories that have pushed us this far forward, and we have no choice, I think, as legislators in House and Senate, to listen and to feel that urgency and pressure to get us forward. So I am confident we'll get this done.
Representative Mahoney,
and then I'll finish. The last time I negotiated with the Senate, I had that hope too. And I ended up having to give up almost 80% just to get one or two things done. So I wish you best of luck. And sometimes, well, I won't say that, but I will say that I wish I had your optimism.
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, just one comment. You know, we've spent a lot of months out of session where only a handful of legislators have been doing this work, but now every single legislator in the House and in the Senate have a role in solving this problem, and that gives me hope, too. The Democrats and Republicans in this room, the Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, I think collectively there's bipartisan will to solve this problem, solve this issue, and the fact that we're in session with all of us gives us more opportunity, I would say.
So we have three members on the list. We are obviously over our time, so we'll take a vote at 4:15, and I hope that folks can hang out for those extra few minutes, but I want to be sure everybody's questions get asked. Representative Katizal-Batun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we had a representative from Pharma join us, and I apologize. I did not take down her name. Is she still in?
Yes, Ms. Lamberton.
Thank you.
On her way.
Thank you for coming down. So I just had two quick questions, I believe. And Representative Howard might have answered a portion of one of them. But regarding the increase in the price of insulin, I was wondering if you could speak to the companies and whether or not that the increase that we've seen, the ongoing increase annually, goes directly to R&D or the innovation of insulin or diabetes-specific medications. And I don't know if there's general data that's available or if there's company-specific data that's available, because I appreciate all the innovation that goes into the work that your organizations do, and I just want to clarify if that's going back to R&D.
Ms. Lamberton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I represent Pharma, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturer of America. It's a trade association, so I'm not able to talk about specific pricing of my member companies, but I do know that a lot of that information that you're looking for is publicly available and reported on an annual basis, and the numbers of R&D, I know collectively since 2000 with pharma member companies, we've had just in 2018, $79.6 billion invested of that, and a lot of that information on the specific member companies would be in their SEC filings.
Representative Katizal-Batun.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I appreciate that clarification, and I'll do a little bit of digging outside of this committee. I wanted to address the app that you guys have created, this MAT app.
Yes.
It looks like, I mean, it's a really exciting number to me that there is 900 public and private programs available to consumers and patients across the country right now. I was hopeful that you might be able to clarify. Are there 900 programs available to Minnesotans, or it helps people kind of dig down geographically? How does it work?
Ms. Lamberton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the medication assistance tool that you referred to, and I appreciate your commending the resource, because it is quite an impressive resource that saves patients and caregivers and healthcare providers from going from company to company to see if they qualify for free or nearly free medicines. These 900 public and private programs are not geographically separated, but it is by medication. So if I am on a blood pressure medication or an insulin medication, I type in the medication and I can find out if I qualify for that medication. And it doesn't mean that I have to be uninsured. I could be underinsured. And that's what's the beauty of this one-stop shopping repository, is it gives access to those that need medicines. And often these medicines get mailed directly to the healthcare provider's office or to the patient's residence.
Just a quick follow-up. Do you think that it would be potentially beneficial to Minnesotans specifically, as we look at this piece of legislation, to streamline from 900 programs down to, you know, fewer, one that's available specifically to Minnesotans here in the state?
Ms. Lamberton.
Madam Chair, Representative, I take your comments, and I certainly will bring that back to my organization to see what could be done to make that more user-friendly. We're certainly interested in feedback to make it more user-friendly for a patient and healthcare provider, and if doing so by geographically sorting or filtering could help, that's something I will definitely take back this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any more follow-up? Okay.
No, thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Tice. Representative Tice is good. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee and members of the public for being here today. As I've listened to the testimony and I've been around here, this is starting my 10th year, not as long as some in this room and maybe more than others, but I honestly hope today, Representative Howard, that we haven't pinned the hopes of people in this room on solving an insulin problem. Or the manufacturers have stepped up, and maybe it's a stopgap measure to provide free insulin or reduced price insulin to people. We have a fix on the table that's working right now, only to walk away from the working group. To walk away from the working group outside of the spotlight where it's not a politicized process. And smack dab on the afternoon of the first day of session this year, first thing this committee brings up is this bill. It's going to pass out of here, folks. Rest assured, it's going to pass. And it will probably sit on the general register after coming through the committee process. And it'll probably be voted on, but that's where it will sit. When you stick your finger in the eye of the people on the other side of the table and you say, we don't like what's happening, we're pulling away from the table and we're gonna take it our way, we could come May 18th, still no resolution. Some of the flaring of tempers that were happening here today in this committee room are just that precursor of things to come on this topic. When you don't have an audience to play to, you can actually get stuff done. That's called a working group. Representative Howard referenced a few moments ago, well, every legislator now has a chance to be a part of this. In a working group, we only had a few people that were involved. Last session, we approved a bunch of working groups to work on various topics for the people in the state of Minnesota. I bet we'll do the same thing again this year. To walk away from the negotiating table and say, we're going to do it my way. I sure hope, Representative Howard, you haven't pinned the hopes on people that the political process right now on the first day is going to resolve this issue, because it's not going to. You need to pull back right now. Go back and get back to the table with the Senate and work something out. That's how stuff gets done. I remember as a freshman, Representative Howard, like you are, I heard it was called the School Trust Lands Bill, and I worked night and day for reform on that. And how I did it was stay at the bargaining table with all of the interest to get stuff done. We never ran it into the political process just to be able to say, hey, we're making some progress. Major pension reform that I helped to author here got two gubernatorial vetoes before we finally got a signature on that. Why? Because we continue to stay working together, working at the table. The governor said he wanted a full solution, not a partial solution. And that was with Democrats and Republicans, Republicans and Democrats, bipartisan support. Again, Representative Howard, I would ask that you ask to have this bill laid over today. Go back to the negotiating table, so that Minnesotans can actually be proud of something that we're looking at doing here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, and I appreciate your work on those bills, and there's a number of ways, of course, you know, here to get something accomplished and across the finish line. I'll submit that our working group met for months and months and months, and if that group was going to produce a solution with those finite number of members, I'm pretty sure we would have done it by now. And I want to just state for the record, it's factually inaccurate that we've walked away from the negotiating table. We are willing to work and find common ground on something that's reasonable. And hopefully, as I mentioned, every legislator here has now a stake in that and a role in that to get us done. And what we can do in the House is move this bill forward and continue to have conversations with our colleagues in the House and the Senate. And it's my hope that we can move this bill quickly forward and get it to the floor and take a vote and work with the Senate and get this done. But there's a number of ways to work. You're right, we're going to have to work together to do that. And hopefully that's what the in the coming weeks provides us. Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll, follow up.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your months and months, but I've had years and years on the same topics trying to get solutions. So there just seems to be no timeline. It's infinity when you're working in the legislature sometimes to get topics done. Please step back and do the right thing for Minnesotans.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. We are going to get ready to move to a vote, but I would like to address the author of the bill and the advocates that came. It's been years and years since Alex Smith died. And it has been years and years that you guys have been coming to the Capitol and asking us for a solution to the need for a bridge for people who are running out of their insulin, who are desperately seeking a solution to get them to their next vial of insulin so they don't have to face death or disability. And we have heard from the public what's not working. And you know what's not working? What we have today. And in addition to the working group that got together in behind closed doors over and over and over again, we know that the advocates have been working tirelessly to find something that works for everything. Last year, the hurdle was we can't have the pharmaceutical companies cover the entire cost of this program. There were people who wanted taxpayers to cover part of the program, and so that compromise is in this bill. There were people who wanted cost sharing for the people who are going to be accessing the program. That compromise is in this bill. A tremendous amount of work and compromise has been done. To say that we have to take it back behind closed doors is just plain wrong. We need it here because this is a bill for the public. This is the bill for the people who have been who are at the greatest risk. And I will tell you, one of the most profound things I think about every day when I think about insulin is whoever said it at the governor's roundtable that was televised last summer. And he said, what are the stakes if this bill doesn't pass? And the answer was someone else is going to die. And two more people have died. The fact that that prophecy came true is horrifying to me. The fact that we have people at risk at the age of 26, and when you look around the country at the deaths that are occurring, this is the age group. It's the people with the greatest promise. Their entire future's ahead of them. And these are the people that are at risk. And so Representative Howard has done amazing work. Representative Howard has shown how to compromise. Representative Howard has shown us how we can work together across the aisle, how we can listen to one another and come up with a program that is going to work for Minnesotans and work for those folks who are making a lot of money in healthcare. Do you know whose interests are served in this? Everybody's interests. So with that, Representative Howard, I just had to say that, and I wanted to thank you for your work, and I wanted to thank the Smith-Holt family for being such a beacon for so many people who are walking around in fear for their lives because their insulin is too expensive. We can, Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, you just said best, people are dying. I want to go on record that I'm doing everything I can to get them the medicine they need. I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Yep. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Halverson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dean?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Haley?
No.
Representative Howard?
Aye.
Representative Cotizo Attun?
Aye.
Representative Crenshaw?
No.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Lislegarde?
Aye.
Representative Mahoney?
Aye.
Representative O'Neill, Representative Richardson,
aye.
Representative Swazinski,
no.
Representative Tabke,
aye.
Representative Tice,
no.
there being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion is approved. And Representative Howard, you are on your way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
And there is no further business in front of our committee. We are adjourned.